If there are any Koreans or people living in Korea out there, I apologize for the provocative title. As a Korean living in Korea, I feel overwhelmed and saddened by all the negative news, especially when it concerns my own country, like stabbing, stalking, gender-based violence, and many more issues. But I do believe it's important to address and discuss these issues openly because life in Korea can be very different from what you see in K-dramas. Recently, there's been yet another shocking incident here in Korea, but sadly, it seems like this type of news doesn't even shock us anymore because dating violence is just so common here. I am not sure how things are handled where you're from, but over here, it's a serious problem. It even makes you wonder how safe it is to raise a daughter here. And while I know men can be victims too, let's be real, it's usually women who are more often affected. So, a few weeks back, something really sad happened in Geoje, South Gyeongsang Province. A woman in her 20s named Lee Hyo-jung was hospitalized after her ex-boyfriend Kim beat her up pretty badly, and then she died 10 days later. The police have started a detailed autopsy on Lee Hyo-jung and are on Kim's case for manslaughter by assault. They both just turned 20. On April 1st, around 8 a.m., he broke into Hyo-jung's studio apartment without permission and just went off, punching her in the head and face and even strangling her. The day before, they'd had a big fight over the phone because Hyo-jung didn't want to meet him. The next morning, Kim, who had been drinking, just barged into her place and attacked her. Hyo-jung ended up with a traumatic subdural hemorrhage and other serious injuries, and she had to stay in the hospital for 6 weeks. While she was there, she even wrote down what happened and told the police she wanted Kim to be punished. But then suddenly she got a high fever and passed away on the night of April 10th. After she died, the police charged Kim with manslaughter and quickly arrested him on April 11th at 1:22 a.m. But here's the crazy part. By 9:20 a.m. that same day, he was released because the prosecution wasn't buying the story. They saw there was a lack of direct connection between Kim's assault and Lee's death. They also said that the emergency arrest didn't hold because Kim was cooperative. He had already admitted to the assault, informed the police of his location, and there was no need to rush the arrest since they could have simply obtained a warrant. They also mentioned that the police were premature in arresting him before even receiving the autopsy results, so I feel they're being pretty laid back here. Then, the very next day, the autopsy results came out saying Lee Hyo-jung died from sepsis caused by multiple organ failure. The police are still saying they can't directly link Kim's assault to her death yet. But seriously, how does that even work? Like, how is it not direct? Police say the autopsy showed that the brain hemorrhage caused by the assault was minor and likely not the cause of death. But Hyo-jung's family argued that she had no previous health issues, and they are skeptical of this initial report from the National Forensic Service. The police have now asked for a more detailed examination from the National Forensic Service to find out the exact cause of Hyo-jung's death. This thorough analysis is expected to take up to 3 months, and the perpetrator will be free during that time. Lee Hyo-jung's parents are devastated. They are claiming that Kim had previously assaulted and stalked her. So they paused the funeral proceedings and filed a complaint against him on April 16th. The police investigation is still ongoing, so we don't have much information yet, but I hope they do their job right, for God's sake. The history of violence between them goes all the way back to their high school years. The background story is that both Lee Hyo-jung and Kim went to the same high school in Geoje, and they started dating. Even then, Kim reportedly physically abused Lee. According to their friends, he was an obsessive boyfriend. Lee thought she could escape from Kim after high school, but Kim ended up following her to the same university. A friend of the victim, also surnamed Lee, mentioned to the media he could have gone to a better university, but he chose to follow her because he wanted to be with her. Lee's friends were aware of the assaults she had to endure. Her friend Kang said Lee's eyes were often completely bruised, and most times she went to the hospital, it was because she had been beaten. Another friend, Lee, said that Kim was extremely controlling, not even allowing her to go to the nearby convenience store, and he was always monitoring her phone. It was also known that Kim assaulted Lee in front of her friends. They had a lot of ups and downs in their relationship, and they were actually broken up when the last assault happened. From December 20th, 2022, to the assault on April 1st, there were 12 incidents of dating violence reported between them, including cases where both got physical, according to records, but obviously she was trying to defend herself. One particular incident between July 2nd and August 1st last year led to Lee Hyo-jung getting a GPS tracking safety smartwatch after Kim assaulted her. Most of these cases were closed because neither of them wanted to press charges. And we will discuss shortly why victims of dating violence often choose not to press charges in such cases. A police official explained that while the police can step in with protective measures like restraining orders in cases of domestic violence or stalking, they're kind of limited in what they can do if the victim in a dating violence situation doesn't want to press charges. They also mentioned that Lee Hyo-jung never reported any stalking, and it was hard to say for sure if the times they met up were against her wishes. Of course, they would say that. According to the police, they made sure Lee Hyo-jung was okay with the protective measures, like the smartwatch, and kept checking in to make sure she truly didn't want to press charges. The police spokesperson said they're going to keep digging into this case to get the charges right, and they're also going to look into the possibility of stalking by checking out the data on their mobile phones. We will just have to see what happens with this case, but honestly, given how lenient things can be around these crimes in Korea, I'm not holding my breath that she'll get the justice she deserves, but I really hope she does. And this is just a tip of the iceberg. Dating violence is still a huge issue all over Korea. For instance, one horrific case from last July springs to mind, where a guy locked up his girlfriend, then did some really degrading acts like urinating on her face and shaving her head. This case is called the hair clipper assault case. There's this woman, let's call her A, we don't know her name, who was basically imprisoned by her ex in his apartment starting July 7th last year. She shared how he first attacked her on the very first day they lived together, and even threatening her to kill her parents and saying that he had a knife in his car. Over those 4 nights and 5 days of imprisonment, she lived in hell with this guy. He shaved her head to stop her from running away, urinated on her face, spit on her, and even made her use a pet pad like a dog instead of the bathroom. She talked about how he would choke her until she passed out. Happened like 4 times. She said he would hit me all the time, and the more she tried to get away, the worse it got. She testified that she was raped daily. He even filmed her naked, kneeling down, and threatened to leak the videos, saying he would store them where the police could never find them. On the 5th day, July 11th, she finally got rescued after she managed to text her parents for help while he was asleep. Her parents called the police right away, and they came and got her out of there. She said the whole thing made her feel like it was her fault, to the point where she even thought about killing herself. When the police and paramedics found her, she was shaking inside a dog cage, all bruised up with her hair completely shaved off. She also explained that he was extremely manipulative, always getting her to apologize first for things she hadn't even done. He'd put her down constantly, saying things like, "You're ugly, and you and I are not even in the same league." And he was so obsessive that if she didn't answer right away, he would bombard her with like 300 messages on KakaoTalk and call at least 20 times. It's just a really messed up situation, but he's denying everything, claiming that any sexual activity was consensual and that he only hit her because she asked him to. Proving dating violence is difficult because it's often seen as just a lover's quarrel. Kim, the suspect, denied all accusations during the trial, saying the sexual relations were consensual and that the victim stayed at his apartment willingly. The victim's father was devastated, saying it's heartbreaking that they had to argue about the rape's legitimacy because the two were dating. After multiple assaults and having her hair shaved off, how can anyone believe a 21-year-old would consent to sex? And even though the victim testified that he strangled her until she passed out multiple times and even urinated on her face, he denied it all, claiming there was no evidence. The burden of proof often lies with the victim, particularly when the violence is behind closed doors and evidence is limited. After rescuing his daughter, her father took 2 weeks off work to gather evidence, searching for CCTV footage and more. To prove the abuse, he gave everything to the police, including the victim and perpetrator's phone passwords, telecom documents, gynecological records, medical reports of the injuries, and psychiatric evaluations. The victim's father spoke to the media about the impact all this has had on his daughter. He said she can't even look at herself in the mirror without breaking down and crying because of her hair. She ended up taking down all the mirrors in her room. She's only 21, at an age where she should be enjoying life, and it just breaks his heart to see her like this. He also mentioned that even though she's getting psychiatric help, going to sessions twice a week, she has tried to take her own life 3 times in her room. She hears voices that she can't control, gets overwhelmed, starts crying, and then just collapses into sleep. It's just really tough on her. He basically destroyed the life of a young woman who had so much ahead of her. So the prosecution charged the perpetrator with violating special laws against rape and sexual violence, in addition to charges of confinement and making serious threats, totaling 7 charges. They pushed for a 10-year prison sentence earlier this year on January 9th, but on January 31st, the court handed down a 7-year sentence in the first trial. But he recently decided to appeal on the grounds that the sentence was unjust, so the case is still ongoing. The trial process itself is incredibly difficult for the victim. While still receiving hospital treatment, she had to attend court twice to testify. Each session lasted over 4 hours, and during the trial, the defense attorney repeatedly insinuated that the victim might be to blame, with questions like, "Isn't it because you were caught with another man? Didn't you have sex in unseen areas like the rooftop and stairs away from CCTV? And wouldn't it be impossible to shave your head if you were resisting?" The victim had to take sedatives to manage her testimony, and eventually she passed out during questioning. Her father, witnessing all this, was outraged. He said the questions were irrelevant and cruelly cornered her. This wasn't just secondary victimization, it was complete destruction of a person. "I can't believe this kind of insensitive questioning is still happening in Korea today. Since the incident, the victim has been hospitalized in a psychiatric facility to receive treatment. She once dreamed of becoming a soldier, but now struggles with daily life due to trauma-induced hallucinations, visual disturbances, and sleep problems. She is also undergoing electroconvulsive therapy to erase the memories of the event. She is terrified of retaliation. She said the perpetrator knows her home address and her family's routines. The perpetrator used to threaten her that he would hire a good lawyer to get out soon and come after her and her family until the end. Experts say that ongoing dating violence can lead to more severe crimes, such as retaliatory murder. A recent example from May 2023 in Seoul's Kimcheon district demonstrates this. A man in his 30s killed his live-in girlfriend in retaliation just an hour after the police questioned him about a previous domestic violence incident. He waited in the underground parking lot of her apartment for about an hour before committing the murder. The police caught the suspect approximately 5 hours after the initial report while he was fleeing in his vehicle. But unfortunately, by then, the victim had already died. Following this, the police planned to apply for a detention warrant the next day. Well, that could have happened earlier. There are instances where, despite victims wanting punishment, offenders aren't detained, leading to more serious offenses. For example, in 2018, a man in his 30s, who had been previously investigated for repeatedly assaulting his live-in girlfriend, murdered her a month later. Although the police requested an arrest warrant in March of that year after he assaulted her and tried to set their home on fire, the court denied it, citing the unlikelihood of him fleeing. He committed the murder shortly after being released. The persistence of dating violence is often linked to the legal concept of semi-consensual, non-punishable offense, where punishment cannot be administered without the victim's consent. Most dating violence cases are treated as simple assault, punishable by up to 2 years in prison, or a fine, not exceeding 5 million won. But if the victim withdraws their consent for prosecution, no charges are pursued. And since perpetrators often know personal details about the victim's residence, workplace, and family, many victims fear retaliation and choose to settle the matter privately. Unlike domestic violence or stalking, there's no legal framework in Korea that allows the police to take immediate and decisive actions in cases of dating violence. For domestic violence, the law enables police to issue an emergency protective order if there's a risk of recurrence. In stalking cases, the law requires the immediate separation of the offender and the victim with a restraining order available upon the victim's request. But in dating violence situations, victims must explicitly request such immediate protective measures. And many wonder why victims remain in abusive relationships. Typically, perpetrators isolate their victims from friends and family and exert control, often escalating to physical and sexual abuse. If gaslighting is involved, it can further complicate the victim's ability to communicate their situation to others. Experts explain that dating violence often starts with psychological manipulation, like gaslighting, before escalating to physical abuse. This means that perpetrators control their partners, both mentally and physically, highlighting the need for careful protection in these cases. The urgency for new laws is clear, given the sharp rise in dating violence reports and arrests. According to the National Police Agency, arrests related to dating violence in 2023 reached 13,939, a 41% increase from 2019. Similarly, the number of reported cases jumped by over 26,000 in 4 years, totaling 77,150 in 2023. Despite these concerning statistics, legislative efforts to protect victims of dating violence are stalling. Records from the National Legislative Information System show that proposals for better protections, including restraining orders, were made twice during the 21st National Assembly. But these proposals have not been discussed in the committee, indicating a significant gap in the legal framework that needs to be addressed to better protect victims. The slow progress in legislation concerning dating violence is partly because of the unclear definition of what constitutes a dating relationship. Experts emphasize the need to clearly define dating violence, including its nature, scope, and types, to legislate effectively. Some experts suggest that laws should focus on restricting the perpetrator's access rather than just protecting the victim. They criticize current measures like giving victims smartwatches as inadequate. They say offenders should wear smartwatches instead. From the police's perspective, it's impractical to always be near protected individuals, and there is inevitably a delay in response when a violent incident occurs. To improve this, offenders should be fitted with electronic monitoring devices to prevent them from approaching victims. Justice is about preventing the perpetrator from reaching the victim, not making the victim avoid them. Dealing with dating violence demands a multifaceted approach that prioritizes prevention, protection, and prosecution. Effective legislation should clearly define dating violence, encompassing all forms of abuse within intimate relationships, and ensure that laws are not only adequate but also adaptable to the complex dynamics of these crimes. Law enforcement agencies need the authority and tools to intervene proactively, not only after an incident has occurred. Ultimately, tackling dating violence is about creating a culture that does not tolerate abuse and respects the dignity and safety of every individual in a relationship. By strengthening legal frameworks, enhancing protective measures, and fostering a supportive community, we can move closer to a society where dating violence is rare and swiftly addressed. I want to hear how dating violence is being addressed in your countries, so please share your experiences in the comment section. And I think it's great to engage in a constructive discussion about this important issue. That's all for today's episode, but I look forward to continuing this conversation and learning from each other. See you in our next episode.